Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We have a special podcast for you guys today. It's basically something that we kind of got the idea for off of a question that we got in a Q&A box on Instagram. And the question was, how do you tell the difference between a genetically created behavior or a learned behavior in a dog? So today we're going to go through the way that we kind of see how these behaviors are different, how you have to approach things with these different behaviors, and then also how these behaviors sort of come about. And where you're more likely to see learned behaviors, where you're more likely to see genetically created behaviors. So first things first, we'll just talk a little bit about the difference between the two and how we're kind of defining each specific thing.
Yep. So as we're working, as we get calls every day, as people come in to learn from us, we're honestly pretty shocked at how little people consider dog genetics. So, for example, we'll have someone mention, hi, I got my puppy at 8 weeks old, and my puppy is very nervous, scared of pretty much everything. Surprise, surprise, the puppy's from a backyard breeder. Surprise, surprise, again, the dog's a frickin' mutt. And surprise, again, the dog's probably a cockapoo or a doodle or something. I know I'm really being specific here, but we see this all the time. Now, if you get an 8-week-old puppy, the chances of an 8-week-old puppy being abused or scared of humans due to human experience is extremely unlikely, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, very, very unlikely.
Like, no one out there really abuses a puppy, right? No one does that. And honestly, if the puppy's going to be attacked by anything, it's probably by their litter mates, or their dog parents. And if that's the case, they should only be really scared of dogs, if you consider that. But if they're scared of all environments, plus if they're nervous of not just dogs, but people as well, super, super unlikely that that was learned. Very, very likely that somewhere in the history of the dog's genetics, somewhere in the history of the breeder's bloodlines, the dogs were nervous. And that's usually what happened, or they're nervous towards people. So we're surprised at how few people actually know this, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk quickly about learned behavior?
Yeah, learned behavior, those are going to be things where it's not necessarily something that comes out of the dog genetically, and it's not something that is something you would typically see out of a certain type of dog. So the way that I could kind of explain that is if you look at a couple dogs that we might have coming in for a training session, if we have a German Shepherd coming in and it's barking at all the people in the class, barking at all the dogs and stuff like that on leash in the class, chances are it's very, very likely that that dog is reacting because of its genetics kind of telling it to do so. Whereas if we have a situation where we have a beagle come in and they're kind of reacting at everyone on leash, it's very likely that that is something that will be a little bit more of a learned behavior. So in a lot of cases, you'll notice something that looks the same in two different dogs can kind of come from different places. So if you notice a dog is reacting on leash, it seems very uncharacteristic for that dog's type of personality. That might be something that is learned. Learned behaviors always need to have either some kind of component of a certain type of raising that's conducive to the dog developing those issues, or a very specific event that stuck with the dog strong enough for them to always associate that kind of situation with every situation that they see further in the future. So a good example of a learned behavior of a dog, say for example, reacting on leash would be if you have a little beagle. Beagles typically are very social with other dogs. And say your beagle one day gets attacked by a dog while it's on leash. If your dog from that point forward starts to react at other dogs on leash, that's a learned behavior. It's not something the dog is genetically predisposed to.
Exactly. Okay, so what do you want to do? You want to talk about examples?
Sure. So we kind of already started that with what I had just said. So if you notice that your dog is exhibiting certain behaviors that are pretty much kind of part of the breed description, chances are that that's going to be a genetic behavior. If the behavior happens because of the event or raising, that's when it's most likely going to be a learned behavior. So we're going to quickly go over a few behaviors that we see in certain breeds. So like shepherds, for example, they're usually pretty protective. They're usually pretty territorial, wary of strangers, especially at dark times of day. Street dogs, you'll notice they'll be pretty nervous. If you notice certain breeds like Weimaraners, Border Collies, stuff like that, acting a little bit neurotically or anxiously, pacing around a lot, those things are a little bit more genetic. Genetic and learned behavior, sometimes these can get a little bit confusing too, because a lot of a lot of genetic behaviors may appear learned because there's a lot of bad raising also happening. But usually it might be a mix of the two as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about the most common ones we see as a comparison. So number one would be, we can talk about a common learned behavior we see, which I like to call lack of independence. That's learned. There's no possible way that's genetic, because every animal has a certain amount of dependence and independence built into them genetically. However, having absolutely no independence is literally not possible unless you teach that to a dog. So let's take a Weimaraner, for example, naturally very anxious dog. And let's say you get this Weimaraner and you decide, you know what, I'm going to take a week off work and hang out with this dog 24/7. You've now taken a dog that's predisposed to being anxious. You've not given it any opportunity to be alone and independent and not fixate on everything, which is anxiety. And basically what you've done is you've taken this dog that's predisposed to being anxious and you've multiplied it excessively in the first week owning this dog as a young dog. So now this dog is not only anxious, but since they have no independence, they've developed extreme anxiety through not being separated. So if that makes sense to you guys, we've now taken a dog that has learned how to be extremely anxious due to separation, due to its predisposed anxiety that it already has. This effect has happened so much faster than if you did this with a very selfish dog, like a what's a dog that's very independent? Maybe a beagle.
Like a livestock dog?
Yeah, a livestock dog is a perfect example. So let's say you have a Pyrenees who just wants to roam your yard anyways and not be near you. If you try something like this with the Pyrenees, maybe the multiplication of the effect of the behavior will take a lot longer as opposed to how it would be with the Weimaraner. So Weimaraner was anxious. You left it near you all the time, or you kept it near you all the time, and you've amplified it and multiplied that behavior very quickly. Another perfect example we see all the time is territorial behavior in a shepherd. So we actually had a call today, and the person told us, hey, my shepherd is starting to react and bark at everything he sees, and he's only 4 months old. Very few dogs out there react at everything they see at 4 months old. It's unlikely. This behavior is very genetic, territorial behavior. It's very common in a shepherd. For it to happen this early means that this dog is naturally, by temperament, extremely territorial. So, and we see this in a lot of working breeds as well, Malinois, other shepherds, very common. So if you take a dog like this and you let it bark and bark and bark and relieve its frustration and get in more high arousal states of mind by barking, being territorial, what's going to happen is over the course of the next few weeks and months, this dog is going to go from mildly reactive to extremely reactive to obsessed with being reactive, and it can happen very, very quickly. Now, if we were to take a lab that's naturally not very reactive, like a very soft service line lab, and every time they fixate on a dog, if we were to pet that dog and say it's okay, or try to redirect with food, but maybe you're inadvertently rewarding with food instead of redirecting properly, what can happen is you've now slowly marked and rewarded small instances of fixation, which over the course of 6 or 7 months becomes reactivity in a dog that would normally not be reactive at all. Right, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I think one thing we should also mention is a lot of people will pretty much always assume if they don't have a lot of professional experience with dogs, or if they haven't really experienced having a dog that was a little out of their league, a lot of people assume that every behavior in a dog is a learned behavior. And this whole podcast is basically going to be on the premise that it's pretty much not. Most of the things that you see with dogs will be a lot of genetic stuff. A lot of people claim that people make their dogs aggressive or territorial, or bad towards them, or like when people see dogs being aggressive towards their owners, they always assume it's something that the owner did. 99.9% of the time, it's not something the owner did. Pretty much every dog we see, there is a genetic component of what that dog's behavior is like. We've never seen a single dog walk in here where the entire behavior was determined by how the owner raised the dog. It's just not physically possible. It's not possible in a human. It's not possible in a dog. It's pretty much not possible in any animal. If I was to take a coyote pup off the street and I brought it here and I trained it like a dog, it would act completely differently than a dog. And it never ever will act exactly like a dog, because a lot of what it's going to do is based in its genetics and has very little to do with learned behavior. So just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so let's talk about genetics versus learned behavior again early on in life. So we went through two examples, the anxious Weimaraner, and also a territorial shepherd. So another common example we can talk about is a very possessive dog. I personally like using retrievers, golden retrievers, or Rottweilers in this example. Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a dog that is naturally very, very possessive. They'll resource guard anything you give them. Even some German shepherds, they're going to resource guard anything you give them. And let's say you take this dog and you decide, okay, you know what? This dog is naturally very selfish, possessive, overconfident, bit of a jerk. Let me try to train this dog and agitate this dog, and maybe I can fix these behaviors. Now, if you try to do this training in the wrong way, which is what most people do, they basically put down food and they put their hand in the food bowl, or they pet the dog, or they even correct the dog for being possessive. If you do this at a young age, you're going to bring more conflict into this relationship with an already possessive and selfish dog that doesn't care about you too much. When you bring conflict into the relationship, the dog is going to go, okay, you know what? My owner's kind of a jerk. I'm starting to not like him, and I see walls of conflict in our relationship, and I'll try to exploit these walls of conflict with a bit of aggression. So what people do is they might start the cycle here, they'll agitate the dog a little bit, and then later on in life, they'll see a bit more aggression. What you should do with a dog like this, if they're genetically possessive, selfish, you will have to teach them cooperation all the time to pretty much get anything in their life for a very, very long time. Now, this is very, very genetic. If we were to try to teach a dog to be selfish and possessive through learned behavior, the only way I can really think of doing that is by excessively bothering a dog when they're eating. Is there any other way you can think of teaching possessive behavior?
I think just like constant removal of
items
with a bit of aggression.
Exactly.
I think you have to be a little physical towards a dog.
Yeah, you'd have to really piss a dog off to create a resource guarding puppy out of a dog that would not resource guard. So we can talk about a few examples on how to make a dog possessive. And do not do this. Obviously, you guys know this.
It's a big do not do list.
Yeah, big do not do. So let's say you get a very non-possessive dog. A good example of a very non-possessive dog, I personally think, would just be a lab. Labs are just super non-possessive, the ones we've met if they're bred properly. And let's say you decide to give this lab a marrow bone. Give the dog a marrow bone, they're biting on it, chewing on it, holding it, and then instead of doing anything, you actually just lift your dog's gums, or you lift their snout a little bit, and you just start pressing it on their gums. Sorry, you lift their lip and you start pressing it on their gums and bothering them. You start touching the toy as it's in their mouth or touching the marrow bone. You fidget with their teeth and ears as they're chewing on the marrow bone. It's very unlikely for a dog to not get pissed off if you do this over and over and over when they're trying to eat a bone. You're now teaching them to be possessive of their food, because they know that if a human being goes near them when they're eating, the only way they can actually make you go away, because they know you're about to be annoying, is by showing you a little bit of aggression. You're now taking a dog that inherently was not possessive and making them possessive, which is why all this online information that tells you to pet a dog and do all that stuff while they're eating is horrible, horrible advice. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I agree with that.
Perfect. If they're overconfident and selfish, again, the only way you can teach them to be more overconfident and selfish by learned behavior is to not make them cooperate through life, give them a lot of freedom, don't give them many rules and structure, and they will over time think that they actually run the world, and you may see a dog that normally wouldn't have showed you aggression start having some aggression. Okay, so let's talk about quickly nervous puppies. If your dog is nervous of everything as a puppy, honestly, you have a tough road ahead. There's not much you can do to make that dog confident. You can build a very strong relationship with them. But if they're genetically very nervous, no matter what you do, they're still going to be pretty shy when new things show up. But we made a whole podcast on nervous dogs. Mm-hmm. So you guys can just tune into that.
Yeah. In some examples of where you'll see true genetic nervousness is pretty much every street dog. It's funny because we actually see a lot of street dogs that live in Toronto, and some were even actually born here. Like, we see dogs that their mothers were imported here from like Costa Rica, Mexico, anything like that. Puppies are born here, and then we see them when they're like 1 year old and they're terrified of everything. Even though they were raised downtown Toronto, which is very, very busy, they're still petrified of everything, even though they've had so much exposure, so much socialization. These dogs just never, ever get over these things. And this is like a true genetic issue. Whereas if you see some dogs where they just weren't exposed, we see a lot of this right now through COVID. Dogs that should be pretty confident, they haven't been exposed to a lot of environments. They haven't been exposed to places with lots of people, lots of dogs, stuff like that. And then they go into that environment when they're 7 or 8 months old. they act a little bit cautious just because it's something they haven't ever experienced before. So that doesn't necessarily mean those dogs are nervous per se. They're just learned to be nervous in a new situation where they're not taught to realize that this isn't really a problematic situation. In a genetically nervous dog, like a street dog, this dog will just be nervous regardless. Even if you train it to a high level of confidence, its ceiling will always be significantly lower than even the dog who's learned to be nervous in those environments.
Yeah, this actually reminds me of that one client we had in our puppy class, and we don't mention any names, but you know, there are certain clients that come here and we're like, what the hell, why are you coming here if you're not going to listen? But anyways, we had a client come here and we were talking about the dogs in the class, and this dog was from Northern Ontario, I believe, or something, young puppy.
Manitoba?
Something like that, yeah. And we were like, hey, so yeah, your dog, for example, is naturally, we know that these dogs can become pretty nervous, reactive, or dog aggressive from what we've seen. And she replied like in the middle of class, and she said, no, I got him as a puppy, no bad experiences. I'm like, that's not what I'm freaking talking about. When the hell did I say no bad experiences? I said genetically, these are the problems we see. I never said experiences. I said genetically. Mm-hmm. Right? So if I raised a lion and I brought him outside and we saw a gazelle, and if this lion did not chase the gazelle, I would go, what the hell kind of lion do I have?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what kind of lion is this? This is not a lion.
It's defective.
Same thing goes for, we even had someone tell us, we went to go see a... just a friend, he's a helper, he's from the other side of the country, and he said, I personally would not want to have a German Shepherd if he doesn't resource guard, because that means he has many of the other traits in a German Shepherd that are not true to the breed, that I don't like. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty interesting point. Mm-hmm. Right, so just to give you guys an idea, genetics are there for a reason. If you get a dog that's bred to be a certain way and it doesn't follow the breed standard behavior, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So it doesn't make any sense. And if like an Anatolian Shepherd, for example, one of our friends has one, if the dog does not resource guard, it's not realistic. It should resource guard, because the dog is basically saying, listen, don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing. Just leave me alone. Give me my damn food and let me guard the property, because that's what I want to do. And you can't tell me otherwise. I've been doing this. It's deep in my blood for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And you've been around for not that long. So don't tell me. Cool. Mm-hmm. So let's move on.
Yeah.
All right. So, sorry, we're just a little messed up on our notes. So we're just going to have to, I think we talked about all that already.
Did you look at the bottom?
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
so we can talk about learned behavior specifically for reactivity. So a good example is we keep talking about a German Shepherd and being reactive, but I just want to talk about learned behavior specifically and reactivity, because a lot of people do inadvertently create this, and we'll talk about how this gets created. So number one, let's say we have a dog that's very dog social, doesn't really care about anything else except dogs. They're really, really fixated. Mm-hmm. A lot of this is learned because this dog has realized that the only fun in life comes from dogs. So when you take a dog out for a leash walk and they cannot get to a dog, you've now provided a bit of frustration by restraining them on the leash. Mm-hmm. They're going to be dying to get to the other dog, and naturally they'll have reactivity due to excitement. You know, they're going to pull. They're going to try to get to the dog. They're like, I can't get to the dog. And you've created this because you've built obsession around playing with other dogs, and now you've restrained the dog from going towards the thing they're obsessed about, which naturally creates a bit of reactivity out of frustration. On the opposite side of this, if we have reactivity due to being territorial, let's say we have a dog that's a little social, but a tiny, tiny, tiny bit territorial by nature, tiny bit. Maybe they bark out your window. Now, let's say you've taken this dog out and they've met lots of dogs and they're happy. They're very happy to meet dogs. But on one leash greeting, they get attacked by another shepherd, right? You do a leash greeting face-to-face. They meet each other, two people on leash. You both don't know what you're doing. And then, boom, the dog's into a little fight. Your dog doesn't start it. The other dog starts it. Now your dog's like, holy crap, dogs can do this to me? I can just meet a dog and, boom, I get a hole in my head. I get a bite. I'm bleeding. Oh, my goodness, I'm in extreme pain. Now, just through that one experience, if your dog is sensitive, boom, your dog is fearful and is going to go from being social to somewhat stressed out in the presence of another dog, because they don't know when this is going to happen again, and they may become reactive due to fear. They're going to try to show that they're bigger than they really are, scarier than they really are, to try to push away another threat and to hopefully never have that experience again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The best way to kind of tell the difference with a lot of these things, because I know we keep bringing up specifically German Shepherds. German Shepherds are just their behavior. Most people know what it looks like. It's very easy to visualize for all of you guys and to understand. But obviously some of you probably have German Shepherds who are big sweethearts and they aren't like leash aggressive and do all that kind of monkeying around behavior. The best way to kind of determine if you're really having trouble figuring out is what my dog doing genetic or is what my dog doing a learned behavior. Best way to always figure this out is to take the dog to a trainer, have a trainer see that dog specifically, and they can give you a better idea of who your dog is, why your dog is acting a certain way. We have tons of dogs that come in here. People think that the dog was abused or whatever was going on, but it's probably just who the dog is.
Yeah, good. Okay, so we made a little list on how to differentiate more difficult to learn behaviors, like things that are more genetically inherent, mm-hmm. And would be harder for a dog that doesn't have these inherent traits to pick up. And we also made things that are easy for any dog to pick up, because these are just things almost all dogs do, and it may not be specifically genetic.
These are mostly based on generalizations of things we see. Like, obviously, there are things that fall outside of these categories, or some things that we have listed in the easy to learn category that in some dogs might be something they just figured out genetically. But these are general things that we see throughout the hundreds of people that we see a month. Perfect. So on the easy to learn list, we have barking out the window.
Yep.
Kind of like Anesh was just talking about with that frustration. You can teach pretty much any dog to bark out of a crate. You can teach any dog to bark on leash. You can teach any dog to bark out of a window. And they'll all do it for different reasons. But if you have like a dog barking out the window out of like reactivity and territorial behavior, that's more of a genetic thing. But barking out the window is something easy for every single dog to learn.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you take a dog that doesn't bark and they watch another dog bark, and let's say this is the type of dog that just wouldn't even bark at anything in the first mm-hmm. place, boom, you can easily create a barker in one day.
Yep.
So these are super, super easy to learn behaviors. Of course, it's amplified by genetics, but any dog can pick it up. So this mm-hmm. is why we always tell people, if a dog is barking in any state of mind they're in, it'll amplify their state of mind. So if a dog is looking out the window and barking, that means they're amplifying their watchdog state of mind, their territorial state of mind, even if they're a soft-tempered dog. I've seen the softest-tempered dogs out there bark out the window incessantly over and over and over, nonstop. And then when someone shows up at their house, they nip them. But this is the type of dog that would never nip anyone in the first place. Mm-hmm. So overall, super easy to learn, super easy for any dog to pick up and do. Doesn't mean it's good. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean dogs should do it, so just make sure you get on it and stop this behavior. Yep. Cool.
Next up we have under the easy to learn category is hyperactivity. So hyperactivity, we made sure to differentiate here high energy versus hyperactivity. Hyperactivity we mean more in the sense of like constant motion and kind of anxiety. So what kind of things cause this would be not giving a dog ample sleep. A lot of dogs need a lot of sleep, a lot more than humans do, so they can become very agitated and anxious if you're not giving them proper sleep. If you're teaching them that there's always something to be going on, if they're always kind of self-indulging in chewing on like baseboards and stuff like that, if you don't teach your dog how to actually relax, they're going to grow up to be pretty hyperactive. They won't be able to really settle in the house.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of that, it's also easy to teach a dog to be very, very flattened. So if you teach a dog, they're not allowed to access that state of high excitement and high drive or high arousal or anything like that. You can, and then you constantly teach them they have to be lying down in the house all the time. They can't really move around a lot. They do have to always be really relaxed. You can create a dog that has a pretty flattened personality, even if that dog is naturally a high energy dog. So say like, for example, you have a lab, has a lot of energy, loves to play. You can make their personality very flat by just making their life very, like a little too structured, too inside of a box, too strict of rules in the house, stuff like that.
Very strict, yeah. Like basically impulse control for everything. The dog mm-hmm. has to check in before doing everything.
Yeah.
Before they do anything, they need to basically display a calm state of mind. A lot of people like this. It's not for me, but a lot of people like this. It's nice to have a dog that's very, very bleh and boring because life isn't difficult, but also mm-hmm. The personality starts to just go down a little bit. So again, it's actually very easy to teach a dog to do these things. You just teach impulse control on all ends, impulse control before they get their food, impulse control for all obedience, keep everything relatively low excitement, low energy, and also make sure they get ample exercise, and you'll see pretty calm, flat behavior all the time. Yeah. Okay, next we have nervousness towards dogs. So this all depends on how sensitive and non-confrontational your dog is. So there are lots of people out there that are, I would say, non-confrontational, and all it takes is someone else basically yelling at them, and their natural state of being non-confrontational will make them even more fearful, and they don't want conflict at all because they just got yelled at by a human being, and they're just naturally just going to avoid conflict at all costs. Like, I don't like the feeling of being yelled at. I'm going to avoid it at all costs. Very similar to a dog if they are sensitive. If they're sensitive and a dog is very harsh on them or pushes them down or bites them and they bleed or, I don't know, attacks them and it's pretty bad and they have to go to the vet, boom. That's all it takes. Your dog is nervous of other dogs. Your dog's very cautious around other dogs. If this happens multiple times with multiple different dogs, it's pretty hard to recover from, I think, for a lot of dogs. Yeah, pretty hard to recover from. If your dog is confrontational, again, that's a genetic behavior. If your dog likes problems, wants to challenge and fight back, if a dog wants to fight them back, they won't become nervous around dogs. They'll just want to fight every dog that shows up with them. So very different. Very different, but also easy to learn. You can have a dog that doesn't really want to fight other dogs unless challenged, to a dog that will just challenge every single dog because they assume challenges 24/7. Cool.
Next thing that we have easy to learn is just object nervousness. So a lot of dogs, like if they've walked past a broom and a broom fell on them or something like that, it can easily cause them to be pretty cautious of certain things. More specifically, more commonly, I guess I should say, would be things like needles at the vet, thermometers, stuff like that. Anything that could easily cause them a very quick, unpleasant experience that they can remember. Usually they can remember that pretty quickly.
Yeah, and this is actually worse if you don't expose your dog to a lot of different environments when they're young. And they can pick these behaviors up and they can actually get over this at a young age. But if they don't and they get older, any little thing can scare them because I would consider them environmentally sensitive. Right. So just make sure you do expose your young puppy to a lot of different environments. Cool. Now we'll talk about behaviors that are much more genetic. And if your dog doesn't have these behaviors inherently, we're going to talk about the behaviors that are more difficult to learn if the dogs don't carry these traits. So first one is high energy, high drive. Dogs are normally high energy, high drive by genetics. I would not put an English bulldog in the same category as a border collie for energy. Right. So it's very difficult for an English bulldog to become a high energy dog. It's not part of their personality, and you would have had to try really, really hard, make the dog work really, really hard to become a high energy English bulldog. It's also hard, but we've met lazy border collies. It's also hard to make a ultra high energy border collie a very low energy dog. Very hard, I find. So genetic behavior, high energy, high drive.
Yeah, that's where with the bulldog, you can have a bulldog that's hyperactive but lower energy. So that's one thing we actually see a lot of, is we see specifically with doodles. We see doodles come in all the time. Number one complaint, this dog has so much energy. This dog is constantly moving around, constantly doing all this stuff.
Yeah, doodles and then are freaking low energy.
We train the dog for 5 minutes, and we're like, your dog is not high energy. Your dog is
about to pass out on our floor because they're so exhausted.
Your dog is hyperactive, yeah. you just need to tell your dog, like, hey, just chill out, relax. You have to put a little bit of boundaries on some of those dogs, and you'll see a completely different dog. Like, we see doodles come in here all the time, pacing, panting, all that kind of stuff. Within a few days, they're the laziest dog around.
Good. Yeah, laziness, I guess we kind of touched on with the English bulldog. A few other examples of lazy dogs would be, I don't know, you know them better than I do. I heard greyhounds are very lazy.
Yeah.
I can't really think of too many others, but yeah, laziness. Human nervousness. This is, I would say, extremely genetic.
Yeah, it's extremely, 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 extremely with asterisks around it. Difficult to create human nervousness. Asterisks.
I know, I said asterisks.
It's extremely difficult to create human nervousness in a dog. People aren't going around beating dogs. People aren't going around hurting them. In most cases, it's very, very uncommon, but it's more likely for a dog to be genetically nervous of certain dogs. Yes. People.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of this is, again, due to their it's due to their survival instincts. If you have a street dog, and if they were very social they would not survive long on the street. They need mm-hmm. the nerve. They need the genetic nervousness of humans to stay cautious and run yep. away. Maybe grab food or a tortilla from a human and run for their lives. As opposed
assuming
to just,
it's a Mexican dog.
Assuming it's from Mexico. They just need to run away, because if they don't, what if they get captured, which mm-hmm. happens? What if, who knows, what if the human being kicks them? And even if it's never happened to the dog, they'll assume these things out of nerves. Or what if a car comes from behind them and hits them as they're not paying attention? They need to be cautious. So human nervousness, I would say 99.9% of the time is genetic.
Yeah, and just like with that, basically when we see a lot of street dogs come here too who have a lot of issues with other dogs also, there's no way that your dog would have survived on the street if it was completely antisocial with dogs. Just would not happen. So a lot of that kind of dog nervousness that you see in street dogs will come from some kind of improper raising. That's yep. pretty much it. Yeah. Too many leash introductions, stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah, they should be relatively social, but mm-hmm. if you do see them communicate with a bit of aggression with each other, that's also normal because yeah. that's how street dogs communicate with each other. They have yep. packs of their own. They have to fight their way into other packs or fight their ways to maintain their own packs. So the aggression is normal. Mm-hmm. Next one is environmental stability. A good example of this is a dog that when you take them somewhere, they act as if they own the place. You know, they're extremely stable in environments by genetics. Nothing really scares them. You know, let's say they're walking and, for example, I don't know how my beagle was very environmentally stable, but there's one time she was walking and it was like, you know, those green transformer boxes, like those mm-hmm. metal, those steel ones. One of them, it was so windy that my dog was walking and she was very young. She must have been a year old. And one of these big aluminum transformer boxes flew off. It wasn't heavy. It was like light, but it was loud and big. So it flew off and it smashed her in the head and she literally kept walking as if nothing touched her. She just started walking. I heard a huge bonk and then she was like, okay, anyways. And then she kept walking. Mm-hmm. However, if that were to happen to most other dogs, they would go, oh my goodness, people are throwing stuff at me. And they're going to get super scared of anything that shows up. So
yeah.
Environmental stability, you bring your dog anywhere or something happens to them in an environment, something falls, also like the object nervousness, and they adjust to it quickly. On the contrary, if the dog is very, very nervous in new environments, like dogs we just mentioned, nervousness, nervous by nature, nervous by genetics, they'll go somewhere and they'll be nervous. So there's stability and there's nervousness, both genetic.
Mm-hmm. And no matter how much you train those nervous dogs, you could take them to 99 new environments, do the perfect training, perfect. And then on that 100th new place that you bring them, there is still going to be a level of nervousness in that dog. Mm-hmm. No matter what you do, it'll always be there.
Exactly. Next, we have aggression towards animals. This is very genetic. If your dog is fighting and knows how to grab a dog and really fight them, that kind of stuff comes really genetic. And there are certain dogs that you can socialize them over and over and over, but when they hit a certain age, you just start realizing, wow, my dog wants to go attack other dogs, or when my dog is wrestling, he grabs the dogs by the neck and starts shaking them. Guys, this kind of stuff is not learned. This is in your dog. Mm-hmm. So you just want to remember, and I'm going to use a pit bull as examples because I need to. It's just they are by nature extremely aggressive towards animals because that's what they were made to do. They were made to fight other dogs. Mm-hmm. They were bred to take down pigs and bulls, so this is what they do. So remember, if your dog is showing any aggression towards another animal and it just came out of nowhere, you didn't do anything wrong. Your dog's just starting to mature and they're starting to have the more fighting genes come out. So again, it's very hard for a dog to learn this type of behavior. We can't really have a lab that is super social and just decides one day to start fighting and getting into fights. The only way this can happen in a lab is if repeatedly they get challenged and fought by every single dog to the point where they realize, you know what? I need to start defending myself because every dog wants to fight me, which will take a lot of repetitions. And a lot of these dogs will end up just cowering and running away anyways. Other dogs will turn all the way to 100 and fight.
Mm-hmm. Or the dog is just very, very poorly bred, which means it goes back to genetics. So if you do have a lab that is like animal aggressive, like it does not seem like something trained at all. It's the horrible dog was nerves. Very poorly bred. Yeah.
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 Horrible nerves.
Yeah. Not, and like, because everyone always gets a little cuckoo about this pit bull issue.
Yeah.
Just because you probably, everyone knows a pit bull that's really, really sweet with other dogs. Everyone knows a pit bull that's really sweet with other people. Generally speaking, animal aggression is what the dog is bred for. So in a true pit bull, you will see a certain degree of animal aggression. The same way with a true shepherd, one that should be working, it will have a certain degree of territorial behavior, defensive behavior, stuff like that.
Yeah, towards animals and humans, yeah. The shepherd.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily saying, like, oh my god, pit bulls are so bad, they just want to kill everything. Like, they're bred to do a specific job. Yes, some of that job is dog fighting, but some of that job is killing pigs and boars, and I guess they're the same thing or whatever. But if they didn't have that genetic predisposition, they wouldn't be good at that job. They were bred specifically for that job, the same way beagles are bred for sniffing stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so we'll talk about...
Don't get mad at us. It just is what it is. Sorry,
yeah.
Guys.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It's not my fault.
Nothing I can do about it. It's not my fault. I didn't make the breed.
I didn't breed them. I didn't create them. I didn't bring them in.
Yeah, and just remember, like, when dogs are showing characteristics that are not true to the dog. So, mm-hmm. like, we always mention labs, for example. If a dog were to react at Donna, my lab, if a dog were to react at her, she'd look into space as if, maybe if I don't look at him, he won't kill me. Maybe if I look at space, he'll think I'm completely useless and dead and he won't keep attacking me. Mm-hmm. And we've had dogs, like, resource guard, I don't know, snow towards Donna. They'll just start eating snow, and Donna goes near the snow, and they go, "Arr!" And Donna literally looks into space like, oh my god, I'm about to die. and then she just starts moving on. You know, yeah. She has no confrontational nature. Sorry about the, sorry about my ding sounds. But she has no confrontational nature. And now if a lab is to fight back, that just means they're naturally a little bit more defensive and their nervous threshold, so the threshold to be defensive, is much, much, much lower, which is uncharacteristic of the mm-hmm. dog, which means not very well bred.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So you guys may be wondering if I'm dealing with these issues genetically or if I've already taught my dogs these behaviors by accident. What do we do to create more stable pets? What do I do to fix what I've done? Mm-hmm. And how can I not make this mistake in the future?
Mm-hmm. So we made a quick little list of how we can basically get around whether it's a genetic issue or a learned behavior right from the beginning of the conception of the dog. How can we kind of avoid these issues altogether? So the first half of what we're going to say is basically how to prevent a lot of genetic issues, things that can happen specifically with the breeder. And then the second half of it is what you can do, also a little bit of what the breeder does before the puppy gets to you to prevent any kind of learned behaviors from developing later on. So first things first, breeding is the biggest, most important aspect of creating or not creating a lot of genetic issues in dogs. So making sure that if you're getting a puppy, learn as much as you can about the mother and the father. If you can meet them, if they're very stable, if they show the traits that you like, chances are you're going to get a puppy that has a lot of the behaviors that you like. And you also want to find dogs that are the way they are, not because of good training, but because of just the way that the dogs are just genetically created.
Yeah, good. Okay, next. What is the breeder doing to desensitize the puppies? So again, this just goes back to choosing a proper breeder. Mm-hmm. So for example, Samantha of Foxfire Beagles, she starts crate training her dogs at 6 weeks. And when they go to their new homes, they're actually really good and quiet in a crate. Now, if a breeder doesn't do this, which is most breeders, you will actually realize when you start crate training your dog for the first time at 8 or 9 weeks, whatever age it is that you get them, it's actually pretty hard. Like, they're kind of crazy if they've never been crate trained with a breeder or if they've never been properly kennel trained and potty trained. And then the chances of you giving up on all that stuff is pretty quick.
Yeah.
Right. So again, if you guys work with a good breeder and they do these things for you and they show the dogs these things, and let's say they correct bad behaviors at a young age.
Yeah.
And they deal with these problems, you'll have way less work to do, and you're not exactly as experienced as you may think you may be to deal with these behaviors, and you won't have to deal with them, and life will be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. A lot of really good breeders will make a big list of things they want to desensitize their puppies to or get their puppies used to, and they'll do a lot of these things within the 8 to 12 weeks before you go pick your dog up. So I remember when I got my puppy a few months ago, I think about 4 months ago, one of the things that my breeder did with him was she took him to farms. She met a lot of kids with him. So he was held by children. I think from the point he was like maybe 3 or 4 weeks old onward, he saw kids once a week. He was exposed to a lot of farm animals. So he's completely fine being around them. He doesn't even really notice them. exposing him to a lot of people. She would occasionally drop a lot of big pots and pans and stuff like that, getting the dogs used to loud crashing sounds, stuff like that. Those things, kind of things, are important for dogs that could specifically be pretty nervous by nature. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. And then, so once the puppy gets to you, the dog should have this kind of baseline of being used to things. What you'll need to do from that point is just continue to sort of expose them to more and more stuff. Figure out what things you and the breeder don't have in common, so you can start socializing or exposing your dogs to those things that your breeder hasn't already worked on. So like if you got a dog from a farm, the dog hopefully is already pretty confident. But if you live downtown Toronto, you want to try to make sure you take the dog out downtown or expose them to things that you'll want to do regularly with them as they're adults.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
Last most important thing. So this will deal with if you've taught your dog bad behaviors and also if your dog has just genetic behaviors overall. Mm-hmm. So if you have taught them certain things, that actually just means you've done a lot of reps in the wrong direction. So if you have a habit of doing that and you need to break your habit, you would need to notice it and catch it first. If you have a hard time doing that, that's the point of what we're talking about right now. You do need to find a trainer because they'll catch you on your bad habits. They'll tell you to stop doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. and you won't make the dog's learned behavior worse. Now, if the dog has genetic behaviors predisposed to doing something and you have bad habits, things are going to be much, much, much worse than you may expect. I always tell people about my dog Scooter when I first got him. I feel like if he had went to another home, he would be extremely dangerous towards humans. And I also think like he probably would have killed a dog by now for sure. Because the average human being would have coddled him a bit too much. They may have let him go to a dog park or play with dogs too much. And if a dog challenges him, he can be pretty dangerous. And also with humans, he's so territorial that if you don't tell him to cut it out, he'll just go bite a human. I know he will. He's never done that yet, but he's so sketchy sometimes when he looks out of our backyard fence. And I think if someone else had him and they didn't watch it, he would clear their 7-foot fence when he sees someone walking down the sidewalk, and he'd probably go grab them and take them down. And this is why we always tell people, hey, if you have a tough dog and you're already teaching them bad habits and you don't get help, like, they're not going to go away. They're going to get worse. So just make sure you do reach out to a pro and get help.
Yep. So we have one last good example that kind of really, really illustrates the difference between more so the learned aspect
learned and genetic. Yeah,
learned and genetic. So a really good example is actually my dog Ashton. Funny, we end up talking about him a lot on here as the unideal pet.
Exactly.
Because the dog, because no of one who should he ever naturally get. Is. The funny thing is people see him on Instagram and or they see him in training class and they're like, oh my god, he's so calm, he's so good. I can confidently say he is the absolute worst dog I've ever owned. Like, I was gonna say he's sweet. He's actually not that. He's not sweet at all. But he's cute. He's cute, and he likes to learn things.
He's kind of funny.
He's very funny. He just doesn't care about anyone.
He's
but
like
himself.
An absolute sociopath, narcissist, gaslighting maniac.
So the way that I came into actually getting Ashton was that he was surrendered here when he was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months. Yeah. And he basically, the reason he got surrendered is just very bad separation anxiety. He's very dirty, and he also resource guards pretty heavily, and he was acting very aggressively to his owners, his previous owners, and they were also first-time owners, so they were very freaked out because they read online that beagles are so nice, and then they got this complete monster of a puppy who was very rude to them all the time. And so everyone who sees Ashton here now, they think he's like a perfect little picture of a good boy. But we actually had Ashton's brother, like his actual direct littermate, come in for a training session a few months ago. And it just really, really highlighted for us the difference with how I'm raising Ashton and how he turned out versus how his brother turned out with his raising. So by nature, Ashton is very, very selfish. He's very possessive. He does not like to listen at all. His food motivation was actually very, very low for a beagle when we met him, but he seems like he has a very high food motivation because he's always barking and screaming and running around for food. When his brother got here, he was so shocked at where he was, and he was just standing on our just concrete slab. He didn't even walk into our yard or anything, and he would not take food. He was totally locked on a dog, did not hear a single thing his owner said to him, constantly pulling on the leash, all that kind of stuff. the owners can't really even sit on their couch because he resource guards their couch from them. And just by nature, very, very nervous, which is something I didn't really realize that Ashton was so much nervous under everything. He's actually like pretty, if he was not raised properly, he'd be a bag of nerves.
And yeah, I would say so.
He would not even probably take food.
Yeah.
We had a day where Ashton was sick a few weeks ago and he had literally zero appetite, which is kind of unheard of for a dog that seems like they have such high food motivation. But yeah, I would say it was a very, very clear picture of what just genetics on their own do to a dog versus when you train a dog to act a certain way despite their genetics, how different they can end up. So by nature, Ashton Sinner, extremely similar dogs. I wouldn't say there are very many differences between them, except Ashton is probably a tiny bit more confident and a tiny bit more confrontational, even though Sinner is a little bit mean as well.
Like Sinner would resource guard a couch if there's a bone. I think he would also resource guard a couch for no reason. That's Ashton's brother.
Yeah.
And the other thing is Ashton visibly looks less stressed than Sinner overall, mm-hmm. just due to the way he was raised. I think the biggest thing to take away from this is realizing that, hey, giving dogs rules actually helps build so much confidence in them because they know, they inherently and genetically know, I can't really lead things. If you mm-hmm. ever see a pack of dogs in the wild, it's normally the big, scruffed up, beat up dog, usually leading the pack. They look like they can handle anything. They're like war torn. They're probably missing like 7 teeth from fighting, and the half they look like Harvey Dent in Two-Face. You know.
I don't actually.
Okay. Anyways, but yeah, they're half their face is missing, and they're just super rugged looking. That's because due to experiences, they just decided, you know what? I think I'm going to take the mantle. I think I'm going to have to lead this group of dogs I have because I'm kind of beat up. However, I'm scarier than all of them, and I can tell them what to do, and they will do my dirty work for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they'll go hunt for me. They'll get stuff, but in return, I'll lead them and I'll tell them what to do and what not to do so that they can stay alive. Dogs know this and they know that they need that person to take the leadership, and naturally their stress levels will go down quite a bit. So by Sinner not being led, we actually noticed he had more grays on his face, like mm-hmm. a lot more grays. He just looked visibly more stressed. He looked a little bit more cautious. He looked a lot older than Ashton, I would say, too.
And he's two.
He's two. Ashton's two. And Ashton, just due to his mom, like, Cass has to be pretty strict with Ashton, because if Cass is not strict, Ashton is like, wow, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And as it may look funny in the moment, I think it's detrimental to his well-being, his mental well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's like one of the main things we noticed when we saw these two dogs side by side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add?
No, that's pretty much it.
Cool. Okay, so that's pretty much it for today. I know there's a lot to talk about, but I think this is all we came up with right now. If we do come up with more, we'll go over it in another podcast. And thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to try to crank out some more episodes as much as we can. All we ask is that if you do like our podcast, if you like what you're listening to, what would really help us grow is if you leave us a podcast review on wherever you're listening to us on, whether it's Spotify, Apple Music, Castbox, whatever it is, Google Podcasts. I don't know all the platforms, but if you guys are listening to us, please leave us a review, leave us a rating, share it if you can. That's how we get seen. That's what makes this podcast more mm-hmm. worthwhile to do. So thank you so much again, and also follow us on social media at Canine Expeditions. I know it says Canine Academy here, but we're working on changing our name. There are just a lot of logistics to it. So it's Instagram at Canine Expeditions. And also, if you like the podcast, again, just give us a review on whatever platform you're listening on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Bye.